from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
This is very serious. It compromises the ability of intelligence organizations to gather information.
We feel that the fact that somebody who's not under suspicion is subject to testing sets a very, very unusual precedent in our country.
We concluded that it was a free and fair and honest election.
We hope that everything gets taken care of real fast before opening day so we can get down to business.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Just a drink or two can affect your driving. This man knows.
I learned it the hard way. I pulled out of this parking lot right in front of a guy. And the thing is, I saw him. I saw him coming. But I could have sworn he was a lot further away. I knew as soon as he hit me that it was my fault. I also knew I wasn't drunk. I only had two drinks. Normally, I wouldn't have had them, but I met a friend. We stopped off. I bought him one. He bought me one. And that was it. It just happened. You want to hear the best part? I'm dead set against drunk drivers, and here I caused a wreck because of two lousy drinks. It's really humiliating for a guy like me to have to go up in front of a judge on a thing like this. I don't even think of taking a drink from one week to the next. I've got three kids, and I think of how lucky I was that I didn't kill myself or somebody else. I'll guarantee you one thing, there isn't going to be a next time.
Even a little drinking can dull your judgment. Think about it. A public service from the Motor Vehicle Manufacturers Association.
Easter week, busy time of the year for the airlines. Thousands of American tourists head for Europe. No time for a disruption of schedules. But according to the State Department's Charles Redmond,
the U.S. government received information about a possible attempt to hijack an American aircraft somewhere in Europe. The information was not specific as to timing, airline, or flight. The FAA quickly issued an aviation security bulletin to advise U.S. air carriers of this information and the need to take countermeasures to deal with the threat.
TWA was among the airlines receiving the warning, and spokesman Don Morrison was not overly concerned.
We believe that the advisory we received is similar to the advisories we receive all the time, and that we're very confident that TWA's procedures and policies are very safe, and consequently we're not concerned about any problem that may occur because of the advisory.
The government also played down the threat, but the fact that the warning was first made public in the London tabloid, the Daily Express, upset Transportation Secretary Samuel Skinner.
A FAA security bulletin has been made public on an unauthorized basis. This is very serious. It compromises the ability of intelligence organizations to gather information.
Ever since last December's bombing of Pan Am Flight 103, there's been a controversy over whether the public should be told every time a threat is received by an airline. A British expert on terrorism, Ronnie Payne, thinks not, because
the more of these things that are arriving at airports and at airlines, the more reluctant people are to take them too seriously. Wolf, wolf is the most dangerous cry in history.
A British aviation security advisor, Dennis Phipps, agrees.
I don't think any useful purpose is served when making these threats public. And the reasons for saying that are, one, we might prejudice our sources of information. Two, we'll encourage terrorists and spurious terrorists to put in increasing threats for publicity. And I think one makes the public unnecessarily nervous.
Security at airports was stepped up following this week's hijacking threat. John Dowd of Baltimore saw evidence of that as he boarded a plane in Rome.
They wanted to know if you had packed your luggage personally and whether people had approached you to carry things on board for them, or whether or not the luggage had been out of your possession at any time, all designed to make sure that the wrong people didn't have access to something that was going on the plane.
All in all, passengers didn't seem to be annoyed by the delays caused.
I don't think it'd be much inconvenience, but all security is good security.
No, the security's got to be tightened up, and if we have to wait a little bit longer, far better so.
No, I'd rather have the delays. It's for my safety and my family.
Of course, some people change their travel plans.
I have responsibility to my family members, and I certainly can't afford to take risks.
IBM felt the same way, advising its employees not to fly to and from Europe and the Middle East until the end of April. Meantime, Britain's independent television news broadcast a videotape made by three young men who were able to sneak aboard a British Airways 747 at London's Heathrow Airport.
We did it to show the world that the security is not tight at Heathrow Airport, and another disaster like the one in Lockerbie can happen again. They don't take measures to prevent it.
The three scaled a wheel well and went right into the cockpit. It's not the first time this type of thing has happened since the Pan Am bombing. It's just the latest incident. Public safety figured prominently in two decisions the U.S. Supreme Court handed down this past week. They dealt with the constitutionality of testing for drug use on the job as it concerns railway and customs workers. ABC law correspondent Tim O'Brien says both decisions were written by the newest justice, Anthony Kennedy.
Upholding the testing of railroad workers, he said the safety of the traveling public outweighed any right to privacy of the employees. On testing customs workers, Kennedy said the government has a compelling interest in ensuring that those in the front lines of the war on drugs are physically fit and have unimpeachable integrity and judgment.
The decision affecting rail workers provides for testing all crew members of trains involved in serious accidents, a provision which does not sit well with Steve Fitzgerald of the Engineers Union.
We're disappointed in the decision. We feel that the fact that somebody who's not under suspicion is subject to testing sets a very, very unusual precedent in our country.
As for the ruling affecting customs workers, Commissioner William Von Raab of the Customs Service says the knowledge that a test would be given has helped weed out applicants.
When we instituted this program, we had about a third of our applicants drop out as prospective applicants for employment in the Customs Service.
It's unclear just how wide an impact the Supreme Court rulings will have, although Attorney General Dick Thornburgh says he hopes the private sector takes notice.
I would certainly hope that responsible employers will share our commitment to providing a drug-free workplace and will be heartened in their resolution to initiate responsible drug testing programs by the court's finding today.
President Bush took his fight against drugs to Pennsylvania Dutch country during the week, telling his audience in the largely rural area,
"My message to you today is don't do drugs. Keep fighting back. Fight for your community and for your children. The war on drugs will ultimately be won one day, one battle at a time."
As the president spoke, just 20 miles away, a truck driver discovered a lethal cargo hidden among his load of oranges, more than 1,000 pounds of cocaine. He turned it over to the FBI.
The volume of this cocaine would equate into approximately 2.3 million bags, a typical street buy of approximately 20 milligrams.
Agent Richard Ross says the coke had a street value of $46 million. Meantime, in Florida, a federal grand jury indicted 30 people on drug charges. U.S. Attorney Robert Gensman says it was a billion-dollar operation.
This indictment alleges the smuggling and distribution of well over 44,000 pounds of cocaine bound for the United States.
Four reputed members of Colombia's Medellin cartel and a close associate of Prime Minister Lyndon Pindling of the Bahamas were among those indicted. Colombia's top drug enforcement officer, General Miguel Gomez, is getting some U.S. help to fight the cocaine trafficker.
Nine helicopters with machine guns will join his anti-drug air force that has made record-breaking raids this year. Unofficial sources in the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration say General Miguel Gomez has done serious damage to the drug gangs since he took over in January. "We expected good things from him," said one agent, "but he is really kicking the coke makers hard."
That's ABC's Timothy Ross in Bogota, who says that in the past 10 days alone, Gomez troops have seized nearly a ton of cocaine. Voters went to the polls in El Salvador this past week to pick a successor to President José Napoleón Duarte, who is dying of cancer. Anti-government rebels did their best to disrupt the balloting as they fought with the military in several towns. Several people were killed, including three reporters. The U.S. had sent a delegation to oversee the election, and despite the fighting, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said,
"We concluded that it was a free and fair and honest election."
Alfredo Cristiani won. He is the candidate of the right-wing party, the one linked to death squads, although Cristiani says the past should not be prologue.
"I think that the U.S. government should not be concerned or prejudge what is going to happen, but rather allow the new government to start acting and then judge its acts, not what is being the perception up until today.
The right-wing victory could cause complications for the Bush administration's attempt to give U.S. aid to El Salvador. As for Central America as a whole,
we've taken the first important steps toward building a successful bipartisan policy in Central America. If asked to summarize that policy in one word, I would say democracy.
The agreement, announced by Secretary of State James Baker, was worked out with congressional Democrats. Senate Democratic leader George Mitchell says it was a far cry from the way things were handled during the Reagan administration.
I congratulate the many members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, senators and representatives, who responded in a way that brings unity to a policy that was, for most of this decade, the subject of bitter division.
As for the highlights, ABC's John Bascom tells us,
the agreement means basically three things. Humanitarian aid to the Contras goes on, $4 million a month for another 11 months. The administration supports the Central American peace plan, and Congress reserves the right to stop the aid if fighting breaks out.
Nicaragua denounced the U.S. plan, saying it violates the Central American peace plan, which calls for dismantling Contra bases in Honduras. House cleaning continues at the Pentagon in the wake of its investigation into wrongdoing. As ABC's Beverly Lumpkin reported,
more guilty pleas were entered in the Pentagon fraud scandal. Teledyne Industries, which was indicted in January on various charges, including conspiracy, fraud, and bribery, pleaded guilty just 10 days before trial was due to start. Teledyne agreed to pay more than $4.3 million in fines. Also pleading guilty to accepting payoffs from defense consultants was senior Navy engineer Stuart Berlin, who faces 25 years and $750,000 in fines.
This is the third round of guilty pleas since indictments were issued in the case 3 months ago. The diplomatic game of did so, did not continued this past week as the boot was given to a Soviet trade official. John McQuethy brings us up to date.
The Soviet trade representative, who has diplomatic status, is being expelled from the United States as part of an escalating squabble between Moscow and Washington. State Department officials acknowledge the trade rep has done nothing wrong. The friction began last month when the U.S. kicked out a Soviet military attaché who the FBI claims was trying to solicit sensitive military information from a U.S. citizen. At that time, the U.S. argued there should be no retaliation on the part of the Soviets because the Soviet was caught red-handed. That's not how Moscow saw it. They expelled an American military attaché. Now, to show American displeasure at that move, the U.S. has taken the tit-for-tat expulsions one step further. John McQuethy, ABC News, the State Department.
Mixed signals from the economy. Last week, it was a big rise in wholesale prices. This week, a moderate hike in prices at the consumer level. On Capitol Hill, jousting has begun over how much to make the minimum wage. The House rejected President Bush's plan for $4.25 an hour and a 6-month sub-minimum wage for newly hired workers and imposed instead a Democratic proposal calling for a wage of $4.55 an hour and a 60-day training wage. The minimum's been locked in at $3.35 an hour for the past 8 years, and for Rufus Spivey of Atlanta, it's got to be higher.
How can a man support a family off $3.35? He can't even support his own self off $3.35.
On the other hand, employers of cheap labor, such as Michael Levin of the Days Inn Motel chain, says
owners will think twice before they add a person because of the increase in wages.
And the manager of Baby Doe's restaurant in Atlanta says
it would put our payroll costs up several $1,000s monthly.
But the owner of a delicatessen in New York City sees a big plus in the higher minimum wage.
The workers are going to be more satisfied and they're going to be more productive.
The House bill still must be considered by the Senate. And then it goes to a joint conference, so there are likely to be some changes before it becomes law. President Bush has said he'll veto any hike in the minimum wage above $4.25 an hour, and he seems to have the votes in both houses to sustain that. A major victory for striking workers at Eastern Airlines. A federal judge has ordered that an outside examiner be appointed to investigate the company's affairs and mediate with its unions. The strike by machinists began on March 4th. And since they were joined by Eastern pilots, the airline's been flying only a fraction of its normal schedule, and thus has been losing money. Meantime, flight attendants at Eastern's sister airline, Continental, walked off their jobs this past week.
We have been without a contract since 1983, when Frank Lorenzo filed bankruptcy, took our contract away from us and cut our pay wages over 50%.
Kathy Akron and her fellow flight attendants were back at work by the end of the week, saying that their walkout had accomplished their goal of publicizing their grievances. Chilean fruits were making their way back to grocery shelves following last week's cyanide scare, and U.S. officials such as John Hardy of the FDA were in Chile to help inspect exports.
We're not here to question the procedures. We don't know where that happened. We're here to work with your government to assist them in any way possible, working together to look at your procedures and to offer our advice.
At the same time, the EPA's pesticides division was recommending a ban on aldecarb, a very toxic insecticide used on potatoes and bananas.
What we're trying to figure out is there an adequate margin of safety that when a person or a child or an infant eats a potato or a banana, is there a concern that they may begin to experience some effects that are essentially like flu-like symptoms?
Just a week ago, concerns voiced about Alar, a chemical used to help ripen apples, led to the fruits being banned from some big city school districts in the U.S. A major oil spill occurred in scenic Prince William Sound off Alaska's southern coast this past week when the supertanker Exxon Valdez ran aground and ruptured. More than 11 million gallons of crude leaked into the frigid waters, and Coast Guard Petty Officer John Gonzalez says they're worried about damage to wildlife.
There's a lot of sea otters and birds that usually nest in that area, but later on in the spring. So right now there's also fish and game out there. They're assessing what damage might possibly happen.
Efforts to minimize damage ran the gamut from special barriers to contain the oil to chemicals to break up the slick, which is several miles long. The news about the air we breathe isn't good either. Listen to Congressman Henry Waxman of California.
The magnitude of this problem exceeds our worst fears. We now know that at least 2.4 billion pounds of dangerous pollutants are released into the air each year.
Minnesota's Jerry Sikorsky puts that figure into perspective.
That's over 10 pounds for every man, woman, and child in this nation. It's over 600 pounds per square mile of the United States of America.
The House committee which released the figure says 60 of the chemicals released into our air each year are listed by the EPA as causing cancer. Chemicals which eat up the Earth's ozone layer are also a concern, but as Lisa Rowland reports from Geneva...
In 2 years' time, most ozone-depleting aerosol sprays will be a thing of the past here in Switzerland. As of 1991, aerosol sprays containing chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, will be banned. Only medical sprays will be exempted until 1993. The ban is expected to reduce the use of CFCs in Switzerland from 3,000 tons a year to a few hundred tons. According to scientists, CFCs damage the ozone layer, which acts as a protective shield from the sun's harmful ultraviolet rays. Lisa Rowland, ABC News, Geneva.
Joel Steinberg was sentenced this past week. He is the New York City lawyer convicted of first-degree manslaughter in the 1987 death of his illegally adopted daughter. The death of six-year-old Lisa Steinberg became a national symbol of the horrors of child abuse. At his sentencing, he defended the way he raised Lisa and his adopted son.
I do not hit, strike, or use any form of forceful discipline of any sort at any time in any way to those children. Or the teachers would have seen it, the neighbors would have seen it, because those children were not locked in a house of horror. They were constantly, as the testimony told you, out.
Steinberg said he was remorseful, but Judge Harold Rothwax gave him the toughest sentence he could.
The maximum of which shall be 25 years, and the minimum of which shall be no less than 8 years and 4 months.
The judge also said he would recommend that Joel Steinberg never be paroled. In Texas, freedom for Randall Adams. After 12 years in prison, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals overturned his conviction for killing a Dallas policeman. The court said Adams didn't get a fair trial because witnesses lied and the prosecutors withheld evidence. And the current DA, John Vance, said,
"We found after, I believe, a very thorough investigation that there was not sufficient credible evidence for a retrial in this case.
Adams returned to his home in Ohio.
It is not a good feeling to be a leper in the eyes of society, no. That is not a good feeling.
Adams had originally been sentenced to die. His sentence was commuted to life in prison in 1980. Last year, the movie The Thin Blue Line had focused fresh attention on his case by questioning the verdict. The story of two men named Pete, what World News This Week, continues in a moment.
What about you?
I did it once. At first, nothing happened. I thought, oh, this is a big thrill. Then after about 15 minutes, I felt it in my head. My hands were tingling.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're listening to Straight Talk about coke. Yeah.
It wasn't great for me. All of a sudden, I felt my heart really beating fast.
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah, you don't understand. It hurt. It was getting worse and worse. I felt like I was going to explode.
Hey, that happens sometimes. I mean, it sort of goes with the territory, right?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes your heart beats real fast, and sometimes you get kind of dizzy.
You mean it happened to you and you did it again?
Well, sure. I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen?
You ever watch TV or read a newspaper?
If you're thinking about doing coke, ask some hard questions. Get some straight answers. Brought to you by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
A surprise announcement from Pete Rozelle this past week. After 29 years as the commissioner of the National Football League, Rozelle told a league meeting he was hanging it up.
I made a decision last October, and the decision was to announce at this meeting I was retiring. I didn't want to be a lame duck commissioner.
At age 63, Rozelle said it was time to be with his family. Pete Rozelle is largely responsible for the stature and profitability the NFL enjoys today. The Super Bowl became football's crown jewel during his tenure. He and ABC's Rune Arledge devised Monday Night Football, and it was Pete Rozelle who negotiated those lucrative contracts with the TV networks. The news about the other man named Pete, Pete Rose, is unsettling. He is under investigation for gambling, and if he is found guilty of betting on baseball, he could be suspended for a year. If he bet on the team he manages, the Cincinnati Reds, he could be banned from baseball for life.
We are cooperating with the commissioner's office, and we hope that everything gets taken care of real fast before opening day so we can get down to business and business winning the National League West. And that's all I'd like to say about that.
Pete Rose symbolizes baseball to many. He has played the sport since childhood. He broke a record many said could never be broken, Ty Cobb's all-time base hit record. And after almost a quarter century in the big leagues, his ex-wife, Carolyn, finds it hard to believe he'd jeopardize everything.
He respects that game too much. He loves that game. That man's up for the Hall of Fame. You think that he would do something like that?
They say that after the news broke that White Sox star Shoeless Joe Jackson had helped throw the 1919 World Series, a little boy called out to him, "Say it ain't so, Joe." Say it ain't so, Pete. And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Tom Kennedy. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.